Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
Welcome back, everyone. Taxation is theft. And today I've got Gilbert with me, who's coming in from Uganda. Welcome, Gilbert. How's it going?
It's going is not so that good. We're just, you know, as you know, the pandemic has spread all over the world. Uganda is also one of the countries that's most hit. As I speak, I am inside. This is my second week in Detroit now. We don't go out, we go out to the new old risk. So the government gets directives that there is no more public means of transport, no more gatherings, and no church, no one, no anything. We are indoors.
Yeah, it's, Sorry, let me. It looks like I have a little. I do have a little audio issue over here. Hang on a second. Sorry, guys. This happens from time to time when things just don't want to work right. There we go. Say something now.
Yeah. Daniel.
There we go.
Am I clear?
Yeah, we're clear now. We have a little bit of a delay.
All right.
So what's going on out there? We have it sounds like the government's shutting down a lot of access to businesses and markets and everything else. Tell me more about that.
During the president's directive about the pandemic and how we take on the measures of limiting or stopping the spread of this pandemic, last time the president was like, all the gatherings, markets, and all the places is where people can access food, where all closed. And then we have a problem. Uganda is a country that cannot sustain all the people. If you give a directive that you need to see everyone indoors, Uganda has a population of 46 million, and most or 75% of this population is unable to sustain or to purchase the foods that can take them to even a week. So now the problem with the people in Uganda is not the disease right now. The problem with Ugandans is the means of survival. One, if government was to give direct like foodstuffs, I will talk about for sure that is maize flour, it's certain few foodstuffs. But then the other problem is one, the government is telling us to be indoors. And then it is also telling the people to, I'll talk about landlords. It is telling telling the citizens that are renting that they are imposed on the essentials like electricity, like water. So here the problem with the citizens is not the COVID-19, but the problem is the means of survival. We are having a big challenge to see more deaths of people suffering from starvation. If government certain foodstuff like to the people that cannot afford food from supermarkets that can take or that can last, then it'd be a good thing.
Right.
On the essential things like electricity, we have got our online meetings. We were saying how if government can at least withdraw these essential aspects of life, the ones I've talked about as water and then electricity.
So you're in an interesting position.
Yes, Daniel.
Because you're there's a few things.
No.
Yeah, can you hear me? Our connection's kind of bad, so I turned off my video.
No.
Oh, can you hear me? We seem to have some connection problems. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay. We have a delay.
I hear you.
So I guess I want to ask, you talk about, people not being able to get resources. What's the biggest difficulty? Are they able to access them if they had the money? Is getting the money difficult because they can't go to work? What's all the difficulty in making sure that people get the resources that they need?
One of the biggest challenges we met earlier, 75% of the 46 million Ugandans are unable, or they live on a daily income. These are people that each time they go to work, they survive on hand to mouth. So when these directives from the president that let's lay down our tools and stay home, stay indoors, even if there were access to the foods, they still have no ways of how they can meet the bills of paying these food. Because most of the people, as I said, 75% live on hand to mouth. In other words, they survive from going to work today, and then what they work, they are living on the pay on a daily basis. It means if someone does not go to work today or tomorrow, that day they shall not get what to eat. Now that government has shut down everything, because these people are unable to move to the market, even if they are able to move to the market, but they are not working anymore, they will still be unable to meet the bills. So what we are saying as libertarians, if government has got all that goodwill to support its citizens, is government to intervene, buy from the food stores, and then start distributing foodstuffs to the individuals, to each and homestead that Ugandans are living. Because if I am unable to access my workers, I will not be able to meet the bills of paying food to the market, all right? So the problem in Uganda is not the access to the market, but the problem we are having is that people are unable to even have all raise the money or the funds to pay the bills in the market. So now the other thing is also back to government. Now that government wants people to survive, and it is saying it does not have enough funds to buy foodstuffs to the Ugandans, we are saying that, well, let's have reduction, or let's withdraw the taxes on the essential goods, on the essential aspects of life. And these essential aspects of life, I've broken them down, and I've talked about electricity. In Uganda, we know Uganda is one of the countries that are one of the biggest suppliers or exporters of electricity, because we have got the River Nile electricity, but we are exporting the electricity to neighboring countries. But a unit cost in Uganda is more expensive than the unit cost in the foreign country we are exporting electricity. So the taxation in Uganda is too high. In such a scenario where Ugandans are unable to have free taxes or let them have these services free so that they can maybe for a government, if it is unable to distribute food stuff, the citizens, it's well, let them put zero taxes on these essential services. Thank you, Daniel.
I want to ask you, can you turn off your video? There should be like a little camera icon. Just click that, just because the connection is really kind of slow. And I think if you turn that off, we'll be able to hear you a little better.
Okay, let me put the audio.
There we go. Yeah, sorry guys, we're gonna turn off the video just because our connection seems kind of slow. But so that's interesting. So Uganda creates a lot of electricity and it sells it to the other countries. But it's more expensive in your own country, the country that produces it, and you're saying this is because of taxes that are imposed on that. Is that right?
Exactly. Yes, exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
So
the price of the unit. Yes, Daniel.
Did it just start raining there?
No, it's okay. I can hear you. You can go on.
What are you doing as far as electricity? Because you say everyone's living hand to mouth and there are no jobs. Is the government helping to keep the electricity on for everybody who aren't able to pay their bills? Or how's that working?
Yeah. What we want is now,
if I may talk, or if I may break the aspect I'm talking of, electricity. Electricity is a fuel. Ugandans know that people are unable to access charcoal as a fuel, a source of fuel in cooking, if they can resort, if government has at least cut off the cost and cut off the taxes on this electricity. We are seeing a possibility of people surviving through cooking on electricity.
I see. So that's a good point. If you're cooking with electricity, that's something that you use for survival. That's not something that should be taxed. But I mean, are there people who are not able to pay their bills because they're unable to work? And is the government shutting the power off, or how's that working?
Daniel, I would say in Uganda, we have only confirmed 30 cases of COVID-19. And to countries like the US or the other countries that are well set, I would say that this is not a number that can cause all the panic or the shutdown.
Right.
And in support of the shutdown. The order. Yes?
I was going to say that, you know, we have we have the same discussion going on here. There are a lot of people who are they're worried about even the numbers that we have, but there's still a lot of people who say those numbers are nothing to worry about because there's, you know, so many people die from the flu and all these other things. So there's still kind of a mix here, even with our numbers, about how serious this is.
Yeah, exactly. If I may talk shortly about Uganda. Uganda in East Africa or in the sub-Saharan region is one of those countries that are known or that are good at combating such epidemics. If you may see, in the 3 years back, Uganda had the outbreak of Ebola, and Uganda combated this epidemic. So if we also may take another thing as malaria, we have a lot of numbers of deaths of people suffering or people dying of malaria. So we are seeing this is not the problem, or the biggest problem is maybe I'm talking my opinion right now. Mm-hmm. Some are saying, they are provoking us to think that because we have heard about WHO, the World Health Organization, talking about some funds that it is distributing to the member states to combat this problem. And then there could be a possibility of Ugandans or maybe the government officials taking advantage of this in return for them to get some of the portions or some of the portion of the money given by WHO. So we are saying this could be the greed of maybe some government officials to have access on the WHO funds that it is distributing to the member states. So in my own opinion, this should not have caused all this alarm, because we have seen epidemics like malaria, the way it is scaring off lives of Ugandans, and we've not seen all this panic. And if I may, I'm not so well certain about the statistics of the deaths we record or register every year, but if you may try to go on Google and search about the cases that Uganda reports every year, it is so alarming. So if we are able, or we have been unable to being panic with such epidemics like malaria and so forth I've talked about, this should not have caused the alarm. Leave alone the United States and the China and the other countries panic. But for us as Ugandans, this should not have caused the alarm. But also, I would also love to forward this back to you, Daniel. What is the cause of the panic in the States? I have always seen the number of cases of death cases reported from the USA as a result of flu, result of criminals or criminal cases. It is always high, and the number that we are seeing of this particular pandemic, it should not have caused all this alarm. We are saying, let's not panic, but let's see how this pandemic is taking us, not locking down everything. Americans are not indoor, no ways of accessing work, no what, no nothing. It is not okay at all.
Right. So when you say Uganda is good at fighting these types of outbreaks, you mentioned Ebola and you mentioned malaria. What, I guess, how do you normally combat that? That's different from COVID-19. How did you fight an Ebola outbreak?
One, I do believe that in Uganda we didn't have the drugs to treat Ebola. Neither do we have the drugs or that specific drug to treat COVID-19. So the only means that we have always used is to see that we put the precautions of the spread or the precautions before this pandemic spreads. One, I will actually push you back slightly from the point you're asking me, from the question. Before we reported any case of COVID-19, the president talked about closing down, talked about closing down the borders and airports. And Uganda, we have only one airport. So the airport was closed, but there were other still officials in government. I'm talking reality. Even if you go on internet, there are sources. You can visit Daily Monitor, you can visit NBS, you can visit a lot of sources, information sources in Uganda. They will tell you that there are officials that paid bribes at the airport, at the borders, to make their family relatives from the US, from the highly risked countries to get in. So you can see the kind of governance Uganda has. But away from that, Uganda is able to fight all these pandemics. Like I just said, Ebola, we used what we call the precaution measures. When we had an outbreak of cholera, Uganda did not have the drugs. But what we did is that we relied on the healthy facilities or sanitation on how Ebola can be contained, not to spread to the other areas. So what we can do right now is, as we know that there is no specific drug to treat this pandemic, we just have to look on how we can prevent it from spreading all over. But that now we have it in the country, what should we be doing? Should we wait for the people to starve indoors? Because the number of the affected cases or the affected people are more minimal compared to the people or to the numbers of Ugandans who are going to die in their houses. Actually, as I speak, we are waiting for the head of state to present or to address the nation, and we are hoping for him. He's actually coming out. That's what we are thinking. He's going to come out and pronounce that there is no more movement. Even if they find you on the streets, I think it will be a directive from the president. But this is not a good directive, because there are a lot of Ugandans that cannot contain, that cannot survive without at least going out to buy anything. Uganda is a third world state that most of the people live on half or less than a dollar a day. A report from Bank of Uganda, it was saying 25 million from the 45 from the nothing, like a coin every month. They don't even receive a coin. This implies that the Ugandans we have, the biggest number of Ugandans, are going to be affected from famine than it would be coronavirus.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I think I've been talking about this a lot. I know the United States isn't in such a bad situation, but that possibility is very real, depending on how long the lockdown goes, because there are a lot of people who don't have jobs, because of this. That's a very good point. I mean, if what did you say? 60 people have died so far from the disease, but people aren't able to get out and get their food and water. They're going to die from starvation, people might start turning to crime and breaking into other people's houses just to try to find food, because they're getting desperate, and that's going to turn into fights, and people could die from killing each other. These are very real consequences to this lockdown that, you know, a lot of people don't like to consider. And of course, you know, when we have government leaders who are telling us that this is just the way that it's going to be, you know, this is coming from a group of people who, you know, they're set. They've got all of your money that they've stolen from you over the years, all the taxes that they've raised. They're sitting in palaces with plenty of food stocked up to get them all the way through this, behind their gates and their private palaces. They're set. So any lockdown order they give us, you know, if some of us die to them, that's how they see it. And that's really, you know, this goes back to the idea that we are not government property. If they want to lock themselves down, let them lock themselves down.
Now, actually, I want to actually correct you shortly about something. I did not say Uganda has gotten any case and has reported yet a death case. Uganda has only reported cases of COVID-19. But not death cases, wow. Right? And then, yes, no case of death.
And that's 60 cases, is that right?
No, 30 cases.
30 cases, 30. Wow.
Yes, we only have 30. But I talked about that if it wasn't for the bribe and the bad thinker or the corruption of the most of the government officials, Uganda by now would not have any case, because if we can see the cases that we have recorded, the cases came after the directive, after the president gave directives of shutting down the airport, the borders, but because they were officials that had their relatives and sons and daughters abroad in the States, in the US, in Dubai, in the UK, and these people bribed the officials or the security officials at the airport and the borders to bring these people out. After now these people came into, that's when we reported the cases. Away from that, today I was watching a program on the local televisions, and there is a member of parliament who had brought in a proposal to parliament that if Uganda has gotten something called the National Social Security Fund. This is an organization for the workers. There is a percentage from the workers that is always collected by that government entity, and that money is given to someone after retirement. So now there's a motion in parliament that what if a National Social Security Fund gives 30% of the workers' money to these people, to the workers, and this money helps them to buy, maybe to help out their families, or maybe to even, because the other people who are coming out in this, for me, I know I have more than 1 million Ugandan shillings in NSSF. But if I may be given 30% of this money can help my family, my relatives, and my other people. But the director of NSSF is telling us that for them, anything to do with the NSSF, it has to be strictly after retirement. But we have an emergency that needs attention and intervention of every government entity, whether private or government, to see that we calm this down. But you can see right now, the executive director has issued, and he has said for him, he has nothing to do with that. And this government goes on to actually move a motion, and then they can amend the constitution, which is not possible right now. So we are saying the problem we are likely to have will not be the pandemic or coronavirus, but it is going to come out as a starvation of most Ugandans who are unable to actually buy. It's back to you, Daniel.
Yeah, you cut out a little bit, but I heard most of what you said. If you just want to say that last part again, there was a noise, like a truck driving by or something.
Okay. Once again, I talked about that Uganda has got a government entity called National Social Security Fund.
Right.
It is abbreviated as NSSF. This is a government entity that collects a certain percentage of the salaries of the workers in the country, whether government or private, that after retirement, this money will be given to you as a security fund,
right, and you said
for you
that
to cater for your retirement. But now,
and you said that there's a proposal to start giving this money out now to people who need it now from the fund.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's an interesting proposal, and it's You know, this is what I like about, you know, for anyone listening, this is really what I like about talking to people from around the world, is, you know, we have different governments and they're all trying to come up with different solutions, to a problem. And it's really interesting to, you know, cause we have a Social Security type program here, and whether or not that's the right answer, because I know our program is insolvent, there is no money, and if they wanted to give that money out, they'd have to borrow it. At the same time, a lot of even libertarians look at that as, yeah, but you took the money from us, so you owe it to us, even if you make your organization go bankrupt. You know, that's their problem, not ours. But I think that is a really interesting proposal. You know, if the government's going to, they're going to be taking money from us all year while we're working, they're going to use it on their special programs. They're going to use it on their big salaries. And then they're going to say, oh, well, and here's the other thing, you know, you talk about it's only supposed to be for after you retire. And like what we're seeing here in the U.S., it's against the law for them to order us to stay in our houses. That's unconstitutional. But of course they say it's part of their emergency powers. They can break the law because it's an emergency. But when it comes to, you know, oh, like actually give us something, give us money, that you already took from us. It's interesting to see that that's not always their highest priority, and that they're, you know, that's when they come out and say, oh, but it's, you know, that's the law. It's not until after retirement. And then they want to, you know, they want to protect the law, but they don't want to protect the law when they're giving us illegal orders to stay in our homes and basically to starve.
Exactly. I did not know that the U.S. also has such programs. So for us here, there has actually come out a lot of proposals from the citizens and also from the interested people that are looking at this pandemic to actually not only be a pandemic as a disease, but also as a disaster on people's lives. Now, there were also other proposals from the citizens and from the libertarians like some of us. We're also thinking that right now, since government is locked down, there is no more travels by the government officials, by the members of parliament, no allowances. We can borrow that money or get that money that was planned for this month for the travels and for the allowances of the head officials to be actually distributed or purchased, that money to purchase certain foodstuffs. And that foodstuff could probably go to the people or to the people that are unable to afford a living. But we have had all these cries. We have suggested on social media, we've met the program. I mean, we've met the president, because today I was talking to the president via Facebook. I approached him, but there is no answer. So we've even seen some members of parliament coming out to say that, well, since we have no more travels, let's utilize that money that was intended, because I believe that money was in the budget, because government strictly runs on a budget. Now, if we have got that money, why can't we use that money to satisfy the needs of the citizens, the voters that brought us into power? Not voters, but also the managers, because we believe it is my tax, or it is the money that I pay as taxes that run the government activities, that sponsor the head top officials to go abroad to meet their programs. Now, if these people can't look at what we sacrifice, because we believe that when we entrust these people into power to plan for the money on our behalf, still the power is in us. Now, if these people can't look at that and they also think like giving back to us, really, I do say that I hate government. I do hate government. That provokes me to say that I hate government. Because if government officials can't look at a scenario like we are in, but it is saying we should stay inside, how can we stay inside without food? People are going to come out and we'll start rioting. And right. The problem with African countries is that when you riot, when you demonstrate, then they will shoot you to death.
What is keeping people indoors?
Yeah. I want to change direction a little bit and ask, because I, you know, this is what I've been advocating in the U.S. is that, you know, everybody should own land. We should all have our own backups. We shouldn't be dependent on paying rent. We should own our homes, and we should have backup food sources. So if anything like this were to happen, you know, whether it's chickens or, you know, small farm animals or crops, a garden with edible, you know, fruits and vegetables, that this would be, you know, a better system for us, so that if we ever did have to shut down like this, or if we did ever have to, you know, leave our jobs for, you know, maybe we get sick or we get hit by a car and we're in the hospital and we're not able to go to work, we should be able to survive without having to live hand to mouth. What is in Uganda? What is I guess so in the U.S. there's property taxes that makes that impossible. There's, you know, a lot of the land the government claims to own. So it's not like we can just walk out there and say, okay, I'm going to take this piece of land, there's nobody on it, and I'm going to build my own home so I don't have to pay rent, and I'm going to grow my own food so I don't have to buy food. Is there any possibility for that to happen in Uganda, or does the government own all of the land, preventing anybody else from owning it? How does that work there?
Actually, that's a fantastic question, Daniel. The problem in Uganda here is that is possible. Uganda is running strictly, if you wanted to look into the world and see an example of a capitalistic country, Uganda is one. But this is now done in a wrong way. This is how it is done. You'll find that a certain class, called first family, or maybe the ones that are attached to the top leaders, own, the government does not own most of the land, but this is how it is done. There has people who access to the government funds or access to the government money that go around and purchase every fertile land. Daniel, I think you remember last year when you visited my plant and I told you the price of buying a plot of 100 meters to 50 meters. I remember I told you the price of purchasing such a plot, and you were like, no, this is too much. The land in Uganda is being too expensive than even Dr. Kyle commented that. But this has been caused because these are specific individuals that have access to the state money, go around and purchase all this money. So most of the fertile land that we have in the country is owned by specific individuals from the government. So it is impossible for a local or someone who earns less than a dollar a day to ever collect money and own his land. It can never be there. Now, in Uganda, we've gotten something that I would actually condemn, and I don't at any time agree with it. The head of state, he has actually always said that it is easy to govern poor people than governing people who are rich. So in Uganda, to be rich, you must be attached to the government. So for you to be able to own land that you can be a landlord on your own, you have to be attached to the government. So that is how it is impossible. Even if researchers have come up and write about Uganda as a free market economy, because prices of commodities are determined by the demand of the product, but it is in the other way around different, because it is to a few individuals that have been entrusted with the state money to control everything. So literally, all the money, all the land that we have in Uganda is owned by a certain cluster of officials in government.
Wow. And that's really interesting too, because you talk about the market and supply and demand, but if only a few people are able to own land, only a few people are able to farm, and that puts a very big restriction on the production, which on the supply. So if you're going to a market and you're just looking at supply and demand, then yeah, it's there's sort of a free market, but that like that doesn't mean there are controls, government controls that are happening outside of the market that are controlling the market. So if you put restrictions on land ownership, you're putting restriction on food production, and then that restriction on food production is ultimately affecting the price in the markets. So I think that's you know, you're absolutely right to point that out. Yeah, and that's I see that as I'm sure every government around the world does it to some extent, where you know I know Mexico is very similar, where you know the government basically says all of this land is ours, but if you're you know if you're friends or family with the governor or the president, then you can buy very cheaply the government's land, and then you can sell it for however much you want, and you can tell people that they're not able to use it. I think in Mexico they have a little bit more like they have squatters' rights, which basically means that if there's, you know, even if somebody owns a big piece of land, if they're not using it and they don't even know that you're there, you have the right to go there and you know, do whatever you want, grow food, live there, build a shelter, and you know, they've only got a certain amount of time before they can kick you out, before you can say, no, this is my land, I've claimed it, and nobody has come to kick me off. I think that's, you know, we don't usually over here anyway, we don't usually think about those types of things, because it's you know, we learn about it in history books as if it's something that is a very outdated process. But at the same time, I think, you know, it is a fundamental right to be able to take an unoccupied, unused land and be able to live your life on it. Because if you don't have that right, you're basically being forced to participate in this, you know, centrally planned economy, which of course is rigged with all kinds of government rules and regulations.
Daniel.
Yep.
Yes, Daniel. I also wanted, before you can you disconnect me, I also wanted to say this. You know, we are in the same actually movement of trying to see that we can have at least subsidized prices or taxes on the sessions in the country. Last time, you know, that you've been following me, you have been my mentor, you have supported me where I have failed, because you have been there for me, Daniel, some time, and then you have been now starting a business in Uganda is not all that easy, because of not that you don't have the funds to start the business, but because the policies of taxation are very high. So the other day we had the president talk about Bank Uganda, and strictly saying all, you know, Uganda is actually an agricultural country, because most of our produce, most of our products, or most of our extra, president made that announcement that all the agricultural machinery that are coming in the country to facilitate value, or putting value on the agricultural produce, those machines or machinery will be tax-free. But you can remember when I sent you the other document, because we had consulted from the tax collection agency, you can see, if you can still remember, the number of taxes. You saw there was VAT, there were around 3 taxes that were imposed on only one thing. And you can see
how hard starting a business or even a business in an economy that is a free market, it is very hard. Really, I am thinking that it is my job that I am being obliged to start up some voice to the voiceless, to start pushing for the freedom and actually push for this concept that you are pushing in the States. So I remember last time I told you I would champion this. And I must make this a reality to say that the next generation has at least lives in a good country that taxation is not all everything that government has to depend on. Because you to start a business, you have to put in a lot. And to survive, it is not easy. So if this goes on, we are likely to see a country that is being in a failed state, because everything government depends on taxes. Whether you can see, actually, Daniel, right now as I speak, we have gotten what we call something called social media tax. You cannot access Facebook, you cannot access WhatsApp, you cannot access Twitter unless you subscribe. Away from buying data, you buy data on your mobile phone or your cell phone, but still you have to subscribe every day on the so-called social media tax. So right now, as we are locked down, still to access the media, which should have been a freedom or a right to the citizens, it is not, but you first have to subscribe to access social media. So please, as you push in that side, make sure you also support us this side as we also push for the same cause. Thank you so much, Daniel, for hosting.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, that is, you know, when you consider, you know, so many people are using social media to stay connected, to stay alive. You know, I see this a lot in the U.S. A lot of people are asking, you know, who needs something? They're helping each other to, you know, bring food to each other, depending on who needs it. And we're figuring these things out. But we're doing that with social media, and yeah, if the government is taxing that, they are literally taxing, they're taxing our ability to survive. And that's, you know, like you have, I don't know, do they charge, I know obviously they charge the VAT taxes on alcohol out there. Do they charge those taxes on food, or is food considered a necessity and tax-free?
Well, if the food is coming, if food is being imported, in the country, like we have Pakistan rice coming in, we've gotten food from South Africa, all that is taxed. There is nothing that enters the country untaxed. And there's very expensive foods in the country because everything has been taxed. Everything is taxed. Everything is taxed, even if it is an essential. Now, if I may take you back, I told you Uganda, in the whole of the region, the East African region, is the country that has got surplus electricity power. But the cost of a unit in the country is more expensive than the cost of a unit in the country that we are being exported the electricity to. So you can see how hard life is in the country in regard to taxes.
Is the electricity produced by the government, or is it produced by a private company?
Oh, initially it was called United States, but after government privatized everything, it is now under a private entity called UMEME. So as we say, but this is still, because I do believe that UMEME as a company must be, why it is rising the cost of a unit is because it is paying a lot of taxes to government. And that's the more it goes for a certain thing, the end result is on the last consumer, on the final consumer. It is the final consumer who pays the taxes, not the company. So in this case, it is not UMEME that pays the taxes, but instead the Ugandans as citizens, as consumers, who pay the taxes to government.
Right. All right. Well, We are coming up to the end of the show. Is there anything else you want to add? Anything you want to say? Do you want to talk about pineapple wine and your business?
All right, thank you, Daniel, for the opportunity. You know, all in all, I am an entrepreneur. I believe in entrepreneurship. I believe in awarding hard work. I do believe I'm a capitalist. I believe in hard work. I don't believe in free things. I do believe that if someone is hardworking, they should be rewarded. So in regard to my business, dear listeners of this mighty podcast from Taxation is the Batman 2020, I do believe that you not talked about this at any one time, but this is an opportunity for me to talk about it. Dear listeners and viewers from the States and from wherever you might be, I am an entrepreneur who has got a small plant that I do manufacture wine, red wine from pineapples. Daniel Berman has tested the wine. The other colleagues, Dr. Kyle, has also tested the wine. And we all in all possible ways of seeing how we can grow up. And last time we are thinking of selling shares, but we've actually come to a final conclusion of how we are going to transfer the shares and achieving. But if there is any other colleague who's listening at this time, please, this is Gilbert. I am a young entrepreneur in Uganda, and I still need support. And I believe that as we push on the movement of taxation itself, I can thrive, or my business can thrive, because this is the biggest challenge that I'm facing. We have what we call taxes that do increase the prices. If you tax me highly, I put the taxes on my product, and the last or the final consumer is the one who pays all these taxes. So please, what I'm saying is that as you join this movement, please do also think about the African countries, not only African countries, but the third world countries in the world, because you know we are facing the same challenges as I am facing in Uganda. So please, I thank you for hosting me and for listening to me. You say that you have a good time in Uganda right now. It is actually clocking to 7, and I would say you'll have a good evening. But if in that where you are, I would say if it is a morning or if it is an afternoon, you'll have a good time. But I remain Gilbert Uganda for God and my country. I love Uganda. I love you, Daniel.
Awesome. Yeah, and thank you again for coming on the show to talk about this. Hopefully, you know, everybody learned a little bit. You know, the governments like to divide us. You know, we have the United States government who likes us to think, you know, hey, it's just America and that's who we need to take care of. But the reality is, you know, these are different governments around the world. Ultimately, they're screwing us over, and we're all in this together as humanity. So I think it's really important that, you know, we learn from other countries. We understand how problems can be solved in different ways, not just from whatever our president says. That's not always the best thing. I think one other thing is, you know, we need to recognize, yeah, how good we have it here in the United States, and help to share this information to other countries so that they can have it just as good there. Because, you know, ultimately it's, you know, like I said, we're all in this together. Texans help out Texans in time of need. Americans help out Americans in time of need. It's time that, humans help out humans in time of need, and we fix a lot of these problems. And of course, you know, even like Gilbert said, he likes rewarding hard work. He doesn't think anyone should get, handouts for free. But we have to recognize that government is helping to keep people down. It's helping to keep people oppressed. It's denying our access to land that we need to survive, which they're taxing what we earn so that we have less to keep and survive on. and even if you're living way above the, you know, the survival level, you know, the government is taking from us, and it's always bringing all of us down. And so, you know, just because someone doesn't have as much as you have does not mean they're not hardworking. It could just mean that the government has taken a lot of what they do have. Not just their money, but their opportunities and their freedom. So, just keep that in mind. Gilbert, thank you again so much for joining. This has been really awesome. I'm really always interested to hear about how things are going out there. I'm sorry that it's, you know, it is a difficult time. And you know, hopefully we can stay positive. We can pull through this, keep pushing for freedom, keep pushing to get rid of taxes. And you know, hopefully we will overcome this and not get back to where we were, but improve everybody's situation around the world. So, thanks again for joining, Taxation Theft, and I'll see you later.
Thank you.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
Roads.
You boys like Mexico!